We are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Michael Storm, and as always, it is my pleasure to be here, try to do this often, not just once a week, but many, many times a week, or, you know, every once in a while. It seems like that's what it's been here lately. I've just been busy. Life has been busy. There's things to do, and sometimes you just have to set stuff aside and let those things cool for a while you address some other things, and that's just where I'm at this point, and just so many things happening specifically, generally, all around me, and dealing with that, and now most of it's out of the way, and so I'm back in my normal, familiar position in front of a microphone with you. You know, there's stuff out there. It's not like I've been entirely absent. There's comic book things out there that I've been doing, and I've had a conversation or two with other folks. I know there's a conversation with Dr. Lloyd that's new, and these things are all out there, but I haven't had much time to spend with you here lately, as happens. I know I have to make time to spend time with the family and with the wife as well, and so I make some time to spend with you, and this is where we find ourselves today, just trying to play a little bit of catch-up on what's going on in the world, and at the same time, keeping it in its place. You know, all these weird and crazy things that are going on in the world right now what are we supposed to do about this? It, like the missing scientists, what are we up to, 13 now or something? And most of them tied directly to the U.S. nuclear program and sort of in and out of specific areas of government and in and around specific people in government. And that was interesting. You know, they've been talking about it for weeks. It's something that people like yourself, myself, we've noticed for a long time. We see these patterns all the time. Maybe half a dozen doctors or scientists go missing over here, half a dozen over there. And it's been happening for decades and decades. And sometimes you figure out what's happened, and sometimes you don't, and sometimes they don't want you to know, because if you found out, you might not like what you found out. And I'm not sure that that's not where we're at this point with those scientists, because the scientists have they've disappeared, and over the last couple weeks it's gone from 10 to 13 that they've noticed that are all relatively tied. But as soon as most people started paying attention, there were others out there, Ben Swan, a number of other people out there who had been talking about it for a while. I didn't talk about it at all, but I was watching it in the background. The only reason I bring it up now is because it's gone from a curiosity, an interesting thing, something that is really conspiracy, government conspiracy, or potentially government conspiracy that's potentially very dangerous to the people, to us, normal people, not just to the government and the actors inside government. It's dangerous to us, potentially, and so it's an interesting and important story, potentially. But it's been minimized already. I don't know if you noticed this or not, but it's been minimized already to a conspiracy theory, a right-wing conspiracy theory, basically surrounding UFOs. And it doesn't matter how closely they're tied, what is really there, but that's the conversation. Instead of what we know for a fact to happen out there, Groom Lake and all these places in Nevada and New Mexico, where where testing is going on and where government has installations where they're doing science and engineering and they're playing with things, whether or not they have UFOs or craft from other places that they're studying is unimportant. It's what we do know that goes on out there. What we do know is that they test bugs and they test weapons and they test nuclear technology. They do things that are dangerous to us as people out there, and to whitewash the fact that there are a dozen or more of these people that are tied to nuclear programs and tied to these places and in and around these spaces, to cover it up, to whitewash it with this idea. They do this a lot to conspiracy quotes. I'm doing the Nixon quote thing. Conspiracy theorists, where they try to associate, particularly with aliens and things like that, they try to associate real world events and real world questions and concerns of so-called conspiracy theorists to these fantastic events that doesn't matter whether they're true or not. So many of these things, it doesn't matter whether they're true or not. 9/11 doesn't matter. Doesn't matter why it happened. It's the result. It's the meta event, right? It's what happens afterward that matters. It's why they did it. Truthful. It's right there. It's right there in front of you. You can't miss it. This is the result of it. It doesn't really matter how they got here, because you're not going to stop it. I don't know if any of you have figured this out yet or not, but you're not going to stop it. You know, when I say that anarchy is not going to happen, that it can't happen, that it's a utopian dream, if you will, that it's an individual thing, that you have to take it upon yourself to adopt the idea of being an anarchist, of living an anarchist lifestyle to your personal needs, your personal life, and that's all that's ever going to matter. When I say that, what I'm also saying at the same time is that this garbage out here that you have for a so-called polite society is the best it gets. That's it. This is the best it gets. It only gets worse from here historically, but let's just take the positive side of it, because I get tired of all of the negative approach. Everybody has to use the negative approach to prove their point or to try to get themselves put out there. I don't want the negative. I'm not concerned about it. Let's just look at the very positive idea. If this is the best that we get, it's not that great. We're being robbed for 50 or 60% of our income, depending on where we're at. The people that are doing so are criminals, scumbags, murderers, rapists, thieves. They are waging war all around the world and here at home. There's nothing good about that position, but this is the best we get. And all I've ever offered with an anarchist society, or look at an anarchist society, the idea of one, is that there's that special class of those people that I just talked about that make everything so bad and make it impossible for the rest of us, even though there are bad things out there in the world. They make it worse for us. They make it impossible for us. They go away. They no longer have the permission, the legal permission, to rob, cage, and murder people, because they don't go along with their plans. Everybody in that sense is on a level playing field, and that's kind of what I wanted to talk about today, and we'll get into it. I will jump into that, but before we do all that, do me a favor, click that like button, share this thing around. It'd really be great if you could share it around. It's huge right now. We're doing really, really well as sort of absent as I've been, I'm out there, like I said, but absent as I've been from this direct conversation, this kind of conversation between you and I, it's been a huge couple of months, and just so many people tuning in and listening, and people mentioning the fact that I hadn't been present, whether it was here or elsewhere. I've been doing a bunch of comic book preview stuff each week for the new issues that come out that I'm putting out in the store, and I didn't do it for a week there, and all of a sudden, just from Connecticut to Washington, state, and from one side of the country to the other is what I'm getting at, including right here at the shop, people mentioned, hey, what happened to you? Where were you at? And I said, extra busy, sometimes some things got to get set aside, but that's the point that we're at, right? There's always something going on, and something, the decision has to be made, choices have to be made. The choices I make are pretty simple, because they are things that come up to me. The people will ask me questions. They'll come up with something that they think that I couldn't possibly have ever heard of before. It amazes me what people will think, what the arguments they'll make, the claims they'll make, the statements that they'll make with the idea in their head that it's going to challenge me to question my morals, to question my stance on these third parties, on government, on authority. There's none of these. There's nothing. You can't, because my positions, my understanding of anarchy and freedom and liberty and our government and this system of democracy and the republic and all the, I understand these things far better than most of the people who live in this nation, and respect them far more than most of the people who call themselves patriots, who call themselves conservatives, because I actually believe those things and won't sacrifice them to the moment or to the particular government or authority that happens to be in control at the time. That's the difference between you and me. That's the difference between the conservatives listening across the network. Appreciate you. If you're listening on Republic Broadcasting Network, support Republic Broadcasting Network. If you haven't listened to Republic Broadcasting Network, there's all sorts of stuff going across the network 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, not just the couple hours or so that I'm here each week doing my thing. republicbroadcasting.org. Click on that donate button over on the left-hand side. That's the simplest, easiest thing you can do. You can also visit shoprbn.com. That's where some of the advertisers across the network, and they've come together, and they have their products and services available through the website, and they see that advertising is working, so they know that you guys are visiting shoprbn.com, because they hear the advertising, because they hear someone like myself, who has almost nothing to do with the network. I have nothing to do with its inner workings. In fact, I'm 100% an outsider. I have known people in and around the network for years now, 15 years now or something like that. It's been quite a while now. And at one point, somebody came to me and said, hey, we have some space. You want to come on the network? And we just would love to have somebody talking about something at this time period. And I said, sure, why not? I have plenty to talk about, even if it's only of interest to me. And so here we are. I end up here, and I'm a fan of the network. Maybe not because of any individual who is putting on a show or giving out information, putting out some news or whatever across the network, but the idea of the network, the people coming together to support each other, to have a central place where we can have the conversation, and that's a fantastic thing for me to be a part of. Because that's about as close as you're going to get me to one of these conservative connections. While I have all of these things in common with the conservative side of our politics in this nation, I am completely disconnected from it because they don't believe it. Like I was saying, they don't believe the importance of the Second Amendment as much as I do, not even close, because they would say, well, certain authority or a certain situation or blah, blah, blah. There's no reason you should never have a gun. You shouldn't have it there. You shouldn't use it against this person or that person ever. Blah, blah. You should do this, that, and it's all within this sort of fake rule book, not the real rule book. The real rule book is you mess with me, you keep messing with me, eventually I'm going to step on your toe, and you better hope that's the best of it, and that's going to be the warning for you to stop messing with me. If you don't, it could go further. That's life. That's real. That's the real law, not the made-up stuff that's supposed to protect you. It's supposed to provide you with some... I don't know what it is, because I've never felt secure around government. I've never felt secure in a government installation. I've never felt secure around government people. I've felt less secure around those people because you cannot trust them. They're all in a gang together. They're not an individual who is looking out for themselves and their best interests and not going to, because they are looking out for themselves and their best interests, they're not going to put themselves into random situations where they don't belong, whether it's because they believe there's some political social reason to do so or because they've been told that that's what they're going to do based on some political or social. That's the problem with it, is all political or social reasoning behind these things and not individual need, want, desire, action, proof of any of these things. And that's the difference between me and the conservatives. And so I can talk to you and I can be friends with conservatives up until a certain point. Same with liberals. Liberals, it's becoming less and less so because they're just off the rails. They're completely batshit insane. Sorry for the language, but that's just, there's no other way to put it. They're out of their minds. And they're not, they're doubling down on stupid. That's what happens. They just constantly double down on stupid. And it's fun to point out sometimes. Sometimes, most of the time, it's just tedious. And then a lot of the times it's dangerous because the things that these people are talking about are detrimental to us as a society and detrimental to us even as a political organization, as it were, because it captures the political system. It takes advantage of the political system, and you end up it at best socialized, at worst communized, and that's where we are. We're on that path, and so there's definitely separations between myself and the politics and the of people that are obvious, and they should be. And so you're not going to trip me up. You're never going to trip me up. You're not going to drop in the conversation it's usually some particular situation, and it's almost always to an extreme. It's almost always a logical fallacy of taking something to the most extreme, most ridiculous, most absurd example of it instead of the most common, the regular, the one that happens 99.9% of the time. And that in itself could be called a fallacy in stating something of that nature, but that's the point. Of pointing out the fallacy is that it's taking this tiny amount, this, and that's what government does in and of itself. It takes out of its constituency some minor thing that has happened to some person or some small group of people that could potentially happen to many. That's not the point. It's not the could, because it almost never does happen to the many. It's almost always this small group. There's very few times that government intercedes, creates a law that it actually then has prevented something from happening. It's almost always a response. It's just like the stock market response to the economy. It happens after the important things have happened. That's the same with government. The important things have already happened. The people have already learned that this thing is a problem, that this thing exists out there. Some people chased after government for protectionism. The rest of us just prepared ourselves to realize that that's a part of reality at this point, and that even if we had never thought it before, it could be something that we have to address out there. Well, government wants to address it on paper to make itself look good. and pretend that it can protect you. And I'll get into that in just a second. We will. But there was just a couple of things that I really wanted to point out because they are they're stories, things that are going on right now that just needed a little bit of attention. And one was that the story of the scientists and them sort of disappearing, and the fact that they've turned it into this conspiracy theory now about aliens instead of the important thing that government employees with a bunch of key knowledge about some serious things are disappearing. That's the important part, whether it's UFOs or whether it's, you know, what is it, the enemy's aircraft or crashed things that they've taken and pulled into hangars and are pulling apart. And the same thing that happens every time we lose a drone or a plane or something on foreign soil somewhere, the military, whoever comes in, the authority in that place comes in, picks up the wreckage, picks up the pieces that if they can get to it faster than the people do, who will scrap it out and try to make money off of it like anyone would. If a plane crashed on my block, I'd be out there trying to find pieces to scrap too, or to reuse for such, especially if it's military. So that's what they do, and the military comes along, the authority comes along, and they grab the stuff up, and we do the same thing, and that could be just the extent of what's happening in places like Area 51, that it's the enemy's aircrafts and things like that and their technology that we're reverse engineering or pulling apart and trying to figure out. Or it could be UFOs. It doesn't really matter. What really matters is that there's these secret locations and people that your tax dollars pay to, you don't know what they do. That's the problem. You don't know what they're doing. Nobody's telling you what they're doing. And they're doing all these things, these covert actions where we should be overt. You understand the display of force that the braggart that is the orange plastic-haired man in D.C. right now is not necessary with a naked display of force and a naked display of intelligence and a naked display of who we as Americans are in truth down here on the ground, you and I, not the government's, not what people see through Hollywood or through our government, the appearance that these things throw up, but the actual person that you and I are, the person that doesn't really care about all of these other things or anything at all, as long as it doesn't bother us in particular, and as long as, you know, somebody doesn't come to us saying, hey, I've been violated, I need some help with something. Generally speaking, these things are not our problem, and as long as they're not socialized through the political system, then they don't become our problem. They don't become a burden on the rest of us, and that's how the rest of us would like to live our lives. This is what's important, is that those people are employed by the government to do secret things which they shouldn't do in the first place, and now they're missing. Now there's some question about them as they've sort of wandered off into the desert, or there's been claims that they had suicided, that they'd off themselves, and that all of a sudden the bodies have been buried real quick and nobody's saying anything. There's all these weird things surrounding them, and it could be. I love the episode of Archer. If you don't know the cartoon Archer, I'm sorry, you need to go watch it. It's very funny. If you like to be entertained and laugh, Archer is great for a laugh. There's an older gentleman who was in sort of Second World War, First World War. He's old, and he's Archer's butler, and Archer is this relatively successful but inept spy. It's a weird thing. It's like a James Bond, Arrested Development James Bond. I think that covers it for most people. It should. But at any rate, his butler was in the war and has all of these experiences and is with these other guys that were in the war, and they created the tontine. And if you don't know what a tontine is, that's basically it's a pool of money, a pool of resources, a pool of goods or things stolen from conquered lands, whatever it is. You put this all into a pool, all of these members put it into a pool, and whoever's dead at the whoever dies off, they don't get any of it. It's their part of it, their contribution stays in the pool for the people who live, and nobody can collect on it until the last person is left alive. And so that creates this, well, if you kill off the guys, the other guys in the Tontine, then you are the one that's left over, and you get, that's why it's illegal to do one. There's all these things about it, but the idea is that you're the one that's left standing. And so they start getting all these news reports, and it makes it sound really suspicious. These guys, they've all disappeared or had significantly questionable deaths. And until they sort of really begin to look at what these deaths are, and it's explained to them what the deaths are, and one of the guys that's a party to it even comes out and he says, the fact is that guy just fell off the roof when he was messing with the antenna on the roof. He fell off the roof, and this other guy, whatever happened to him happened to him, and there's nothing nefarious about it. There's not somebody killing off the members of the Tontine to collect. That's not what's happening at all. But in the end, they're looking at this thing and they're going, oh, well, it appears to be this thing, and it's being put out this way in the press as being this huge conspiracy, and look out for all of this, and oh my gosh, what's going to happen to the people that are left over, and what's going to happen to us, the people? And you find out that, oh, well, it's just not that, you know, you dig a little bit deeper and you find out that it's not really that interesting, and that these things happened to these people, and that they really did happen to these people. We don't know yet. They're still working on all that. One other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick before we get into government protection, I'm going to do a whole anarchist audit here of government protection. I just have these thoughts kicking through my head, a couple of questions. Can government protect you? Does government protect you? I think both of those are valid questions, right? Do laws prevent crime? What can we do about protecting ourselves? And so these questions, I'll dive into them here in just a minute, but I just wanted to talk about one other thing, because it was another one of these things that's indicative of our time and is sad, and it makes me sad as an individual to see it happening, because there is it's a weakening of humanity is what it is at the core. We've already weakened men, pussified them, turned them into little wusses that are incels stuck in the basement and just playing video games and can't find a woman and don't know how to manage relationships and all these things. It's a fact. It's what's happening. And it's things like this that are doing it. So it's just going through normal day, probably looking at news or something, and I just hear this language, and I hear this phrase, trauma intelligence, and I think, oh my, I know what trauma intelligence is. They're saying that my entire intelligence is based on traumatic experience throughout my life, and that's what we used to call street smarts, and it's not... it's not about the trauma. That's the problem. I'll get to that. It's the use of the word trauma associated with something, because then you're supposed to feel sorry for somebody, right? We used to call it street smarts. When you grew up outside of the traditional education system, that's what it was. It was street smarts, and it wasn't necessarily the worst way to learn at all, by any means. That's not what it's about, and that's why you can't call it a trauma. That's why calling it trauma is wrong, because it's only traumatic if you're looking at life through a particular lens. If you're saying that life has to be, that people have to be, that they have to grow up a certain way, then you're looking at it through a particular lens that doesn't include the entire rest of society, aside from you and your personal opinions, or you and your group and their opinions about who and what life should be. And so there's no, when you were educated outside the traditional education channels, you dropped out of school, whatever, you learned on the street, you went and got a job is what you did. Or maybe some people did learn on the street. Some people became hookers. Some people became drug dealers. Some people didn't do anything at all. That's not the point. It's whatever the actual learned people that learn something, the majority of us that continue to just go, whether we go through the system, whether we follow through the public education system or not, or whether we go to college or not, any of these things, they don't matter because we still survived. We still did the job. We showed up every day. We still have our lives, our houses, our wives, all of these things, our families. You know, it's all there. It's already in place. It's not trauma. It's just life. Maybe it's the hard knock life if you want to do the Annie thing. If you want to think about Annie, maybe it's a hard knock life that you've lived. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that's through somebody else's lens, and of course, relative to every individual and their own experiences. But that's like many words and phrases that generally perfectly encompass an idea that they've been changed for the sake of academia or for some new social or political standard that they're trying to make. And the one that I always go back to, and this is, I think I probably got this from George Carlin, it would be my guess. Just, I hadn't thought about it, but it just occurs to me off the top of my head that that's probably where it comes from, is in talking specifically about shell-shocked, and it's about the manipulation of language, and it's that Orwellian control and manipulation of language, and it's something else that I've talked about before. It's a gatekeeping thing. It's to make things harder, seemingly harder and more complicated than they really are, or more important than they really are, or to put a professional stink onto something. Remember when somebody went to war and they didn't come back quite, you know, so stable, and they wake up having nightmares about the war and having been there, and they have to go to group therapy, and they have to talk these things out, or they'd have to go see a psychologist and talk the thing out, and that was called shell shock. For decades and decades, it was called shell shock. It perfectly explained what everybody in the room knew what you meant when you said shell shock. You're talking about that guy over there that got the 1,000-yard stare, and you know that guy. And everybody knew what it meant, but then that became post-traumatic stress syndrome. And now that I think about it, I'm almost certain that was something that was pointed out a long, long time ago by George Carlin, and it just continues to be a thing where they change words, and they do it for political and social reasons instead of where most language comes from, adopted by the people, created by the people, just like the market, just like the economy, where natural free markets, capitalism, natural laws of things, these are all real things that happen, and this is a good example of it. The language that we use and that we understand from each other, and there are people that will take our language and try to turn it into something that says, well, only we, if you use this type of language, you're a poor person, you're not a rich person, you're not an educated person, you're one of them, you're not one of us. It's a gatekeeping thing, and it's very, very obnoxious. And I had to point it out because what we're talking about here is turning a positive, something that's worn as a badge. Street smarts. I learned on the streets. I didn't go through the traditional public school system. What I know, I learned because I picked up a book or because I went to work and I picked up a shovel and I did that stuff. That's how I know what I know, not because somebody in a classroom told me that. And that's a badge. That's street smarts. That's a badge that you wear. And obviously, they're the examples of people. I could point to any number of them making fun of in pop culture, people with street smarts. But these are people that are being, they're not using their intelligence. They're being emotionally driven, and that's what the joke ultimately is that their street smarts aren't smart enough to get them past this emotional position that they have, or this emotional situation that they're going through. So street smarts is a badge, but now it's not. It gets lumped in with trauma intelligence. It's trauma. Your intelligence, your smarts are derived from trauma because you didn't follow the traditional path through the public school system to learn what all of the rest of us know. Thank God I didn't. That just drives me nuts. It's just one of those things, and I don't know where you go with that, where that ends up. Well, I see where it ends up. I see it, but the people who need to see it don't see it. Me seeing stuff doesn't do most people, almost everybody else, any good at all. So it doesn't matter to say that I see what's going on. I have to point out what's going on to other people and keep reiterating it. When Carlin was talking about shell shock becoming post-traumatic stress syndrome, it had to be Carlin. I'm going to look right now while we're sitting here, because I'm just chatting here with you. Carlin, post-traumatic, let's do that, traumatic stress disorder is what it comes up, but it immediately starts coming up. So I know that's exactly where I got it from. It's funny how they made that connection. Known for his sharp critiques, linked to modern post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, used to be called shell shock, and it's a manipulation of the battle fatigue. It was in World War II, Korea. It was operational exhaustion. I guess these are all the phrases and things that he used in the bit then, when he, post-traumatic stress system, and that's right. I like that sterile jargon-filled label that buries the truth, and I think that's a really good way to look at it. I think that's absolutely right. That somebody else has to think about what that is. What trauma intelligence versus street smarts? Those are two. They can be. They're the same thing. They're trying to say they're the same thing, but clearly one of them is a badge to be worn. The other is a victim badge. It's the thing that says, oh, I'm a victim, please feel sorry for me. And unfortunately, there's just too much of that going on in the world, and it's just sickening. So let's look at then government protection. Let's just do a little anarchist audit of government protection. It's been kicking around in the back of my head for a couple of weeks. I knew that as soon as I got back into the swing of things, it would be the first or one of the first things I talk about. So it's the first thing I'm going to talk about as we go forward. And it is a simple question of, can the government protect you? And I think the simple answer is no. It seems very unlikely, because it's not ever present. As much as it wants to be, as much as it tries to be, digitally, as much as it tries to be on paper, it tries to put out the laws, whatever it is, to insert itself in every single interaction that we have as people, it's just not there. It's not there to stop someone from violating us or victimizing someone else. And so the best that they can do is to create a pretext under which to suggest that the fear of their presence, so the law, the laws, the paper laws, the guys with the guns and the machine guns and the suits and the badges and the armor and all of that, that the fear of their presence, or that their punishments that they'll mete out to somebody, contributes directly to keeping crime down. It's to suggest that just because they exist, not because they're present, not because they're there, not because they're going to stop something, but the very notion that it exists. This is a law. It exists. You can't kill people. It's a crime. That stops people from killing people. Absolutely not. There's nothing to suggest that that has ever been true. The only thing that laws do, again, is they create a pretext, and it's a multi-layered pretext, to suggest that they're doing something, that they're there for a reason, that government is there and that it's protecting you by its mere presence, and that you just have to keep putting more and more money into it and more of your health and well-being into government, because the world is becoming a much more dangerous place. But they don't tell you that the most dangerous thing is government itself. It's killed the most people. It continues to kill the most people. It uses excuses that aren't about violating other people or other people's property, or protecting other people or protecting other people's property from violation. They lie about that. They claim about that. They tell you Iran has nukes or is going to have nukes. They're a week away from having nukes. They have been away, a week away from having nukes for about 50 years now. So it's ridiculous. Which week weren't we involved over there in Iran that they didn't take the opportunity to just go ahead and build the goddamn nukes? because they didn't have them. They didn't have the ability to do so. And it's interesting because we already know. We remember when they did the bombing? They bombed them here back a while back. Not the war that's going on right now, the undeclared war or the president's war, whatever it is. They bombed. They bombed and they said, hey, you know what? We did a really good job. And we took out their stuff. And now their nuclear capabilities are pretty minimal. And we did a really good job. And they all patted themselves on the back and stroked themselves in probably many ways we shouldn't be trying to picture right now. And they said they did it, except that then there was a report that came out that said, no, was it Bondi or one of these people that was the head of this, and that's why maybe she's not around anymore. I don't keep track of these people. If I use the wrong name, I don't care. And I don't care that you know, and I feel sorry for you that you do know. I know that pink kryptonite turns Superman kind of flighty, like pink guys in pink colors, and yeah, and but you know, I read it somewhere. I don't commit it to my life and believe that it's a reality and that it affects everything. You memorize the name of some idiot in Congress or in the government, in the White House's cabinets there, whatever they are, and you think that knowing that's important, more important than knowing pink kryptonite turns Superman kind of flighty. It's not. They're literally the same level of who gives a good goddamn. They really are. So government can't protect you. I don't think that it can. So does government protect you? And I think the obvious answer to that would be no. It creates laws. And by virtue of catching just one person, right, breaking the law while many, 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 many other people go unpunished, uncaught, unpunished, that's yet another pretext for them to claim that laws protect you, that government is protecting you. But we know for a fact that they're not, because they're not actually preventing the crime. And then once they get past that point where, okay, so they caught the guy that violated you, well, the stuff that they charged him with doesn't really have anything to do with violating you. It's almost all of the stuff that they charged them with is about violating the political and social opinions and about making money for the state. And you, as a victim, are second thought. You're a secondary thought to the prospect of justice through the justice system, justice for justice sake, instead of justice for individuals. And I think that's where it, because justice is recompense directly to the people who were violated, all these other things that they pile on, all these other violations of the political and social opinions, the conspiracy if there's more than one person involved. Conspiracy doesn't help anyone but the state. It's another charge that the state can say, oh, well, you violated the law, because it is a crime to conspire with someone to break the law. No, it's not a crime to conspire with someone to break the law. You know what a crime is? When you break the law. And if somebody just talked about it with somebody, and it's hard to suggest that they're necessarily a part of it. Maybe you go through the process. That's the whole point of not making it about the state and making it instead about justice and the violated individual, because then you look at that person and their situation and all of the evidence and everything that relates to that, not to stare decisis, not to precedent, not to anything that is silly in nature within our so-called common law system that we have, that's turned itself into our so-called justice system. There's no justice in violating people for violating opinion. That's not justice. That's just theft. That's just creating, again, that pretext, a state, a place where somebody who's violating somebody else now has to pay you too, because the opinion of the violation, instead of that guy owes the guy that they violated, and it may be the person who arbitrates the violation. And that's why remember a couple years back, lady brings her dog over my house. My dog bursts through the door. Their dog is in our yard. It's on the end of a leash, so it's completely legal, but their dog is still in our yard. My dog was in my house, never left my yard. They get in a fight. I lose to the state. I didn't get sued. She didn't sue me. I lost to the state and had to pay her back for her damages. I've got a whole bunch of quotes going on here. Because I violated the law, not because I damaged her property. They never claimed that. They claimed that the damage was from an extension of my violation of the law, and that I had to pay her back because of that. But if they hadn't found me guilty of violating the law, which was my dog wasn't on a leash, even though my dog was in my yard, and they brought their dog to my yard because their dog was on a leash, even though they couldn't control their dog, they didn't have control of their dog, it was in my yard at the end of their leash, fully extended. None of these things matter to the law. If I had sued, or if she had tried to sue me instead of the law stepping in and giving her undue recompense, she should not have been given money. It was her fault that her dog and she were there. My dog has never left my house, not for a person going down the street, not for another dog going down the street, ever, until that person who could have walked on her own side of the street. She lived across the street, didn't have to come to my side of the street, could have stayed the hell out of my yard, could have kept her dog over at her house, could have not taken her dog out into public and not controlled it. If she had sued me, she would not have won, because the standard would be different. Do you understand how that works? And if I had wanted to sue her, I didn't care. It was like $800 or something that I had to pay back for damages to the dog. I had to pay almost $2,000 to fix my own dog. What I'd like to do is light her house on fire and sit there and make her watch it burn and see, well, you know what? But, oh, that was something I actually did to you. I actually did that to you. I came over to your house, and I lit your house on fire and made you stand here and watch it, you stupid bitch. I didn't bring a problem to your yard, let it go, and then blame you for the problem. That's what happened in that case, and that's what happens in the case of government, in the case of government justice. There was no justice delivered in that situation. I was just violated twice, and that's what government does. What about the laws themselves? Do the laws protect you, the actual pieces of paper? We've already suggested that they don't, right? I've already kind of made that pretty clear already in just leading up to the conversation in other bits and pieces. I think it's pretty clear that they don't. They're political and social opinions. They're written down on paper. They obviously have no power in and of themselves to do anything, so they require enforcement, and enforcement then requires accepting the political or social opinion or ignoring the political or social opinion and just enforcing the law. That's what most people do, and that's why I don't care about the police. That's why I don't care about dead cops. I don't care if you wear a badge and you're not a good person. That's it. You're not a good person. You when you take off that badge, you might do good things, and you may be even a good person to other people. When you put on that badge, you're just an immoral, incalculable automaton. You're unaccountable. Incalculable is in that you don't have to calculate anything. You don't have to do anything. All you have to do is survive. They just tell you, go be the one to go home at night. Murder, kill anyone you see, whatever, will try to protect you. It doesn't matter, especially if you're claiming that they're violating one of our magical laws. That'll really help back up your claim when it gets to court. So I guess we have to ask, does enforcing the laws then prevent the crime? Because that's what has to happen. They require enforcement. The papers themselves don't stop anyone from committing crimes. So I guess the question is, yeah, obviously enforcing laws prevents some crime. in some roundabout ways. It almost never prevents crime because for so many reasons. One, they're not there to stop it. So it doesn't stop it. And then it's also selectively enforced. And so the goal becomes more about punishment for the violation, again, than it is about recompense for the people who have been violated, somebody who's been violated, our victim in any of these cases. The government, the judicial system, it's not meant to prevent crime. It was put there in place, the founding of it, and this is where I was talking earlier about how I know more about this than the Patriots, and I respect it more. It was obviously put there in its place to protect a property and person through giving you a channel to which you can bring claims against somebody without having to just go out and violate themselves. You're violated, somebody steps on your toes, so you kick the crap out of them. You kick the crap out of somebody, they come back and shoot you in the face. The idea is that this sort of thing doesn't have to happen when you have a third-party moderated system of justice that is voluntary and that is based on facts and facts of the case, not on, again, precedent and these other ideas that have tried to turn our laws into expedients to spit people out through the system, to get them out there so that they can violate people to take that money for those things like the traffic violations and the all the political and social opinions that don't have actual victims. That's one of those questions. I say, well, we need to get rid of, if you want to start, how do we change things? They say, well, where would you start? I would say, well, let's get rid of every single law that doesn't have a victim. Well, which ones are those? That's the next question. The ones without victims, the ones that you can say are enforced without a victim. Speeding laws, drug use laws, many, many, many laws, including, like I was talking about, conspiracy before. That's just a law that the government uses to claim that you can't do something and that if you do it, they can take more money from you or they can lock you in one of their cages or that they can justify murdering you. This is government. That's all governments. It's this Republican, Democratic, American government. It is Western government. It is every single government in the world because that's what government is. It's the redistribution of power and wealth to a protected class. I can't explain it any better than that. It really truly is that. And so our judicial system and our government, they're not meant there to prevent crime in the sense that they police it and they prevent it by setting up laws. They're meant to adjudicate the arguments to protect people from recrimination when there is an argument or a claim made against somebody else. It'd be nice if these people would empower themselves and protect themselves, but they claim to offer some level of protection. And this is all obviously very debatable, and that's the question that we're even coming at. Do they protect you in any way, shape, or form at all? And unfortunately, it's not. So what becomes when the goal is about punishment for the violation, it's not about adjudicating the violations of person or property. It's about generating wealth for the justice system. And so instead of being there to resolve the conflicts between people, people in states, between states and states, this is what our justice system is for, and to protect their so-called rights, that's one of the things that it's there for. But there's no suggestion that it was ever meant to be an adversarial system, that the laws, that what we do, what we call our justice system, is to be weaponized against us as people as opposed to us as criminals. criminals, as violators of some person or some other person's property. So none of the things that government do actually protect us or can protect us. And so what about, like, the fact that crime is down right now? Is that a result of government policy then? They've talked about how crime is down. Well, okay, but it's been trending down since the 70s, and a lot of that has to do with natural things that have come up through the marketplace and through the easing of restrictions against conceal and carry across many states, self-defense. These things have played a much bigger role in that. Security cameras and the fact that there are cameras everywhere and always watching people all the time. These things, and they're more ubiquitous in this time period that we're talking about, this more recent decrease of time. There's people wandering around of crime, decreasing crime. There's people wandering around talking about these things as if they're happening in a vacuum, as if they're not, as if there's something to, oh, we can't tie this to it, or, oh, well, it's just the policies. It's all, the reason that drug deaths are down is because of ICE. Well, that's not true, because the drug deaths were already on their way down. And if you look at the actual numbers, they were way overblown in the first place. We've talked about this before. And so it's not just as simple as so it's part of a fallacy, right? Almost half of all murders go, more than half of them, I think at this point now, go unsolved. And it's not because those people are getting smarter or there's a particularly new level of crime. In fact, it's harder to commit these crimes, right? We have the technology and things to help us prevent these types of crimes. Instead, it just can't be what that's about. It's got to be other factors that contribute to that, and law enforcement spends too much time trying to direct us socially and get paid when we don't comply. And so that's what they're spending their time doing, as opposed to solving murders or actual crimes. Those things are almost incidental in what they do. So what is it all what does it all mean then? What we're talking about is literally a protection racket, and I'll explain that to you, because a protection racket is a racketeering scheme. So you have to know what racketeering is. Well, it's a phrase that was coined by the Employers Association of Chicago when they were talking about the influence of organized crime on the Teamsters Union. So that's what it dates back to. That's what it goes back to. And it's defined as a service that calls forth its own demand. That's exactly what I've been describing to you about what government does and what government is. It calls forth its own demand. It wouldn't be needed otherwise. It creates a pretext, or it takes a very small sampling of a problem and uses that to extrapolate to a larger subset or basis for its power, and that's where it's at. So it's a protection racket. It's racketeering. It's a scheme to by a criminal organization. What would be criminal in any other sense of the word? That's what's sickening about government. In any other situation, if you didn't call it government, if it wasn't left and right, if it wasn't Republicans or Democrats, it would just be criminal organization. They coerce payments, taxes, and on the threat, or the veiled or direct, it can be indirect, communicated, it can be implied, it can be direct threat of harm, it doesn't matter, it could be violence, they could rob you, that's what they're doing, burn down the house on you, or whatever. It's protection money or a protection fee that they're charging you. They're saying, we're here to protect you, and because we're here to protect you, you have to pay us, and you have to pay us whatever we say, you have to pay us. And as they grow and claim more basis for their protection racket, they get more money. They take more money. And this is the fallacy. This is a fallacy that I started to mention here just a moment ago. It's post hoc ergo propter hoc. That's Latin for after this, therefore because of this. It's the suggestion that something is what most of us would look at as a non sequitur. That doesn't follow. That idea doesn't follow from the previous idea. Those things are not connected. Well, when you use this fallacy, the post hoc ergo propter hoc, it's quite the phrase. It just means after this, therefore, because. So this happened because this happened. But there's no actual connection between them. Because Y happened after X, Y must have caused X. Because crime is down, it must be the presence of government that caused crime to be down. It must be because they've cracked down. It must be because ICE is on the street. It must be a load of nonsense, and government cannot protect you. And I am already out of time. How do we protect ourselves? Empowered people. It's, I say it all the time. You have to believe that there is value in yourself, and thus you are worth protecting, and everyone needs to do that. I have to go. I will see you next time. Until then, take care. Click like on this. Share it around. We'll see you next time on Toward Anarchy.
So far as poverty is concerned, there is never in history been a more effective machine for eliminating poverty than the free enterprise system and the free market. The period in which you had the greatest improvement in the lot of the ordinary man was the period of the 19th and early 20th century. Those of us in this room are the heirs of that. We benefited from the way in which our parents and our grandparents were able to come here, and by virtue of the freedom that was offered to them, were able to make a better life for themselves and us.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy.